Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Always nice to be here to share the best in health and healing. I've been on the radio for nearly 50,000 hours. WR, WABC, ABC Network, WBD, and the Progressive Radio Network, WBAI, WMCA. That's a long time. Always sharing the best on health and healing, always from peer-reviewed journals. But here's the issue. Rather than today giving you the latest nutrient, coenzyme Q10 or vitamin E and what it does, let's just stop for a moment and ask yourself, if you've been listening to the program, or as you can today, watch it, because I'm Zoom streaming this, how much of the information and what specific information, if you decided, is important enough for you to actually try to incorporate into your life? Because what is the value of information, knowledge, if it's never used? And that's where I'd like to take us today for a few moments. Back at the very beginning of my scientific career, when I was a junior scientist at the Institute of Applied Biology, amongst these very intelligent and well-credentialed scientists from around the United States, I ask a basic question. How much of our health and longevity and the diseases we manifest is due to our selection? Meaning, what do we add in and what do we leave out? And generally, when we leave something out, it's because we don't like something. We don't want to change a habit. We don't want to change where I grew up. For example, it was Friday night. For whatever reason, everyone had to have fish sticks. Why? And no one ever answered that question. On another night, we had to have liver, onions and liver. Why? Because it was giving you iron, as if nothing else would give you that iron. Because we didn't know. And the diet was pretty awful. And in fact, where I came from, West Virginia, we were not in a good place to grow food. Over in Ohio, yes, but not across the river in West Virginia. It was all hills. And so unless someone had a little garden in their backyard for about 3 or 4 months a year, that was it. You ate everything canned or jarred. And with jarring, you either added a lot of salt and or vinegar, depending upon what you were preserving, or you add a lot of sugar. And if you bought some pears, you can bet that they tasted really sweet. None of that was good for us. Canned goods and preserved foods were not good. They lacked enzymes, antioxidants, and our diet was really limited. So you might have eaten meat every day, but you just ate it prepared a little different way. What we didn't emphasize was fruits and vegetables, nuts, berries, didn't have those. That was just unusual. The only nut we ever had was really not a nut, it's a legume, is peanuts, peanut butter sandwich. That meant peanut butter with jelly, lots of sugar, on white refined carbohydrate bread. So needless to say, people walked around with very elevated blood sugar levels. And when we ate meat, we ate too much meat. Everybody prided themselves, if they were from a working middle-class background, as I was, that your mother was able to go out to the butcher and get a 2-inch thick steak. I mean, look, 2 inches. Now, when I would later have the opportunity to have the equipment in my laboratory and do an analysis, I would find that in one meal, we were consuming 2 to 3 days worth of protein, way too much. And so everyone thought it was normal to have aches and pains. You know, my foot, is acting up. Or I got sugar diabetes. They called it sugar diabetes back then. And yet, what were they doing? Nothing. They were taking insulin. Now, insulin is a lifesaver, but it also causes weight gain. So it was not unusual once a person got out of high school and college, was no longer active physically, and we were told to take it easy. Do you remember that? The older you get, the less was expected of physical activity. In fact, take it easy. So it was nothing for people to sit and read. Now, we had a lot of people who had a lot of knowledge from reading. And yes, we read a lot of nonfiction books. And I remember my Uncle George sitting there, big fella, and he would spend all day reading. He would get up to have lunch, maybe go to the restroom, but he would sit for 4 and 5 hours. When people went to work, they were expected to stay in their chairs for 8 hours, only taking breaks, what they called a coffee break in mid-morning, afternoon, and lunch break. Otherwise, and then you get home, you sit. Now, everything we were telling people to do was just the opposite of what they should have done. So we lived in a vacuum of misinformation, some of it intentional, some of it just because we didn't know. And we thought that as long as you had a glass of orange juice, you got all the vitamin C you needed. No, it wasn't. And most people had subclinical scurvy. And so we were really unhealthy. It was an exception for a person to live a longer life back then. And everybody smoked. Everybody drank, not to get drunk, but social drinking. And on Saturdays or Sundays, people would go to their favorite tavern and hang out, watch the ball games, and on the counters would be these fried catfish. Now, catfish is a terrible fish to eat. It's a bottom feeder. Eats everything that goes to the bottom, and it's all fat and very toxic. But they would cut up that fat catfish, and they would deep fry it in salt. It was considered completely normal on a Saturday or a Sunday when the college football games were on Saturday and the pro football games on Sunday to go to your local tavern. And we had 2% beer, meaning 2% alcohol. So you wouldn't get drunk unless you had an awful lot of beer. But you would get a beer belly, and that was not good. And you would disrupt digestion, and you end up with higher rates of stomach cancer. But nobody paid attention. They would take catfish and or chicken wings. They would deep fry them in white flour and salt, and then all day long, people eating that, and then that would make them thirsty because of the sodium, and they drink beer. It was not unusual for people to drink 6 to 10 beers in a day. But again, they were sedentary, doing everything wrong. They were not there exercising. People didn't talk about their problems in public. Everything was kept quiet. You were supposed to just, take a deep breath and go forward. That caused a lot of problems. So here I am as a young scientist, and I said that we're not looking in the right places. So I asked the director, would it be all right if I took some trips over the next, I didn't know how long, turned out to be 5 years. I'd take like a 2-week trip. I'd go down to South America. I'd go to Europe. I'd go to the country, go to the hills, go to the jungles. Because I was curious, why is it that some people around the world who have none of our medicine and or hospitals, none of our vitamins, are living longer lives than we are, where we're supposed to have the best healthcare system in the world, the most scientists and nurses and dietitians and nutritionists, and yet we're the sickest of all the developed nations. We were right up there with Bulgaria. And what I started to find was this, and this is why this segment of our program is so important today. A little different, but very important. I found that in all the cultures that I went to, their diet was generally non-processed, meaning they didn't have cans they opened and, throw stuff in. They would get from their surrounding environment what they ate. And I noticed when I was in Italy in the countryside, I went into one what looked like a barn, and probably was at one time, but it had dozens and dozens of these long shelves. It was a big barn, probably around 4,000 square feet, probably about 25 foot high. And every single inch of that was covered with food, dried food. They would have all these dried tomatoes and dried peppers and herbs. They would have olives. I remember being in one barn where they had over 80 different varieties of olives, and they knew how to cure each one. And I'd never seen anything like this. And they had, in one place, they had all these barrels, and each barrel had a name in Italian on it, but it was loaded with dried fruit. And I asked them about how do you dry your fruit, and same way that we did over in Little Hawking, Ohio, on my great aunt's farm. You take the fruit, you wash the fruit, you slice it, right? You throw away the pit, and you put all that onto what looks like a screen door. Then you put this white, very thin muslin cloth on it, and that prevents the insects from getting on it. That stays for about 4 to 5 days. And then when it's dry on the top, you turn it over and you do the same thing. So you get both sides of the fruit. And then you put it in a keg and you put bee propolis, which is a natural antibiotic. It's one of the best natural antibiotics in nature. And you put that around. That's what's in the beehives. That's what keeps the bees healthy. And then you seal it and date it. And that'll be good for several years. And I started seeing how self-sufficient they were, how they started making their sauces not out of a jar or can. They made it from scratch, low heat. Might take 3 or 4 hours to cook that sauce. And as it cooked at different times, they would put in different items into the sauce. And when I would be invited to join them for lunch, lunch was slow. I was used to eating lunch, in 5 minutes. These people know it might take 2 hours because they had courses. They didn't put everything on a plate. Bring you one plate at a time, not a big plate, small plate, a salad, okay? That'd be one serving. A soup, that'd be a different serving. And then they bring you the antipasta, grilled eggplant, grilled garlic, grilled onion, grilled mushrooms, grilled fennel. And I'd never eaten anything like that. And then they put sauces on it. They brush sauces on. You have a choice of sauces you want. I didn't eat bread, but they had a bread that's homemade. They grew their own grain. They milled it. And that's what they did. Very unique. But most importantly, they kept active. In fact, I saw people in their 80s and 90s. When you speak with people from other cultures, other ethnicities, who have a different background, who look at life differently, there's where you learn the little nuances that we don't have right now in our society and haven't for a long time. The power of belief in something greater than yourself. And it starts with the power of the family, the importance of family, the importance of those relationships, where the older people were always looked upon as the wise men and women of a family and of a whole village. And they always felt relevant. And they talked about how, to the day they die, they feel that their life is still important. Yet in our society, the older you get, the less relevant you are. Ask the average woman in the United States, do you feel that you're still as attractive to other people at 50 as you were at 20? The answer is, of course not. So we are an ageist society. We value people based upon their looks, their income, their social status, their education. And we start matching what we need, we think we need, or want, with what's available. And that creates a lot of anxiety once you get past a certain age. Once you've, let's say you're in your 40s and now you're divorced or widowed and you don't think that's important. Well, in our society, as in other societies, they have a whole group of people that support you in every transition you go through in life. From marriage to death, they're there. They're there to explain things you otherwise wouldn't know on your own necessarily. And so when I finished my trips, at the end of 5 years of doing this, off and on, I prepared a chart on longevity. And I've added to it, but it came down to this. And this is why I want to share this with you. This is the point of this whole in-depth conversation. The more change you're able to make in a positive way that allows you to harmonize with life's truths, starting with, who am I? What is my purpose? What should I be putting my energy towards? What support do I need? Do I have that? If not, what do I need to do to obtain that? That's important because the best vitamins, NAD, PQQ, these very important pycnogenol and resveratrol, all these nutrients that we can prove allow you to live a longer life if you have adequate amounts. That's one part. De-stressing, or dealing with stress appropriately, even if you can't always change the circumstance of your stress, that's another part. Physical activity. The more active you are, the more resistance exercise, aerobic exercise, 10,000 steps a day minimally, then that's a big part. That's even more important than the supplements or de-stressing. Then, very important is a healthy plant-based diet, or at least, if not that, a Mediterranean diet, which is not a vegan diet, but it's still very healthy. And juicing is very healthy. Modified fasting is healthy. Now, these are things I've found out since that time I've incorporated. It's always evolving. And then what kind of work do you do? Do you work in front of computers where you're getting electromagnetic pulses hitting your body all day long? That is a negative. That'll take years off your life. Do you work night shift? Years off your life because you're not secreting melatonin that you would normally do when you had the deep sleep. And you need rapid eye movement sleep. And when you're working night shift, that's deficient. So that's two negatives. Now, then think about the stress in your workplace, toxic elements in your workplace, any chemicals in your workplace. That makes a difference. Then you add up, do you smoke? How much? How often? How long? Do you drink? What type of alcohol? What is the percentage of alcohol? How often? And what amount do you consume? That can take, just alcohol by itself can take anywhere from 5 to 20 years off your lifespan. Look at Errol Flynn, one of the great, handsome, great personality actors of the 1930s and 40s. By the age of 50, he was burnt out and looked terrible. His liver was gone, he drank, and he smoked. Think of all the people that drank and smoked. Those two together create massive amounts of free radical damage, oxidative stress, that prematurely ages you, that creates inflammation in the brain, leading to Alzheimer's, dementia, etc., in the heart and the lungs. So I found a list of things that will take years off your life and then things that put years onto your life. So if you take an average age, let's say, of 70, at one time it was 70, and by the way, we're almost back to 70 now because of the last 3 years, we've lost 3 to 4 years off the average life expectancy because of quarantining, etc. Now, what happens is you start with 70, or 74 if you want, and then you take away years for everything that you do that's negligent to the body's needs, that compounds the process of disease. And then you come with a number. Then now from that, you add on all the good things you do. I exercise every day for 10,000 steps, aerobic and non-aerobic, with good, strong, powerful exercise. I eat a good, healthy, plant-based diet. I don't eat between dinner and breakfast. I modified fast 1 day a week, just juicing. I'm taking my supplements that my body requires because I got a blood chemistry to tell me what I'm deficient in so I can put the nutrients in my body requires to function properly. I'm mindful of dealing with crisis. I try to go to that calm place instead of overreacting and yelling and screaming and arguing about something that doesn't change the outcome except for the worst. So my stress levels are less. I try to have healthier relationships with healthy people. And I try to live in an environment where I get out into the green space or the blue space, water or vegetation. Now, when you do all that, you're about 60% on a scale of 0 to 100, 100 being ideal, and you're at 60%. And yet we stop there. We don't even attain that. We're probably only able, the average citizen, the average person watching and listening right now, if you're really honest, most of you are around 20%. Yeah, you'll have some juices when it's convenient. And you won't make your own if you can buy them bottled, but the bottle's not as good as the making it your own. And you're not always going out of your way to go to the farmer's market to get fresh, organic, locally grown. And all the excuse we give ourselves is not going to change this outcome. What's missing? What is the single most important part of being healthy? More than anything else, nothing can compare to it. Being happy. Happiness is the foundation upon which everything else is built. Happiness is not a thing. We don't go out there and buy happiness. Yet we try. Look at all the people. Look at all the professional class. Look at all the millionaire class. Look at their children. Well, you're looking at about 70 million Americans. 70 million. And we have about 331, 32 million Americans, more or less. So you're talking about a high percentage of the American population believe that if they only went to that school, if they got that degree, if they got that honor, if they got that acknowledgement, if they got that, but purchased that house and certainly that plane and got to buy those designer jewelry items and got to get those, you know, Gucci shoes. And once you start thinking that's how I'm getting happy, then you brag about it. You show the world, I'm happy. Look at this. Look at this. Look, I'm eating toast with a gourmet avocado topping on it. Yeah, I had to, you know, it was $24 in the store and I could have bought the avocado and bought the toast at it myself for $4. But hey, I'm successful enough, I can afford to buy my happiness. No, you can't. In my career, I've counseled tens of thousands of individuals, at least 3,000 or more, who are very successful, many very famous, Academy Award winners and members of royal families. I've counseled a lot of people. I haven't met any of them that are happy. I've met many who are highly motivated to be happy, but they thought that just possessing stuff, the more stuff I accumulate, the more friends I have, the more pictures I have out in the world, people looking and say, oh, I wish I had them. No, that's not happiness. And what taught me that? That this is the basis of all healing and prevention? All those people I met around the world, in Spain, in the Bahamas, in Trinidad, and up in the mountains, the Blue Mountains down in Jamaica. Yeah, the hut doctors and all the people, not the people in the metropolitan cities, not the people in the suburbs, people in the country. And those are the people who said, happiness begins with your family, with your community, with your common beliefs, with the daily rituals that give you empowerment and meaning, and understanding your uniqueness of your own gifts, of what you can contribute, and what you receive in that exchange. So that's why I don't care where you are on earth. If you show me people who are happy, I'll show you people who have a leg up on living a longer life. Now, when you're happy, there may be challenges. You may have to defy some of the beliefs. You may have to challenge and deconstruct some of the rituals and perceptions you've had of how to live, what to do. If you doubt me on that, just look at all the people who lined up to take the vaccine before doing their homework. They just trusted authority. And now look at the consequences. Everything we were taught is being challenged. And now those people have to live with the angst, the dread, the fear. Will something happen to me because of this? Will they change? Probably not. When you look at people who are living in the wrong place and they're living right in harm's way, like the latest hurricane that just happened, a Category 4 to 5 hurricane, I was right here in it, but I was prepared. When I went out, I found not a single one of my neighbors had a generator. So I bought 5 extra generators. They'll keep a house going, you know, with whether it's a diesel or gasoline, at least until electric comes back on. But they hadn't even thought, they didn't do that. No one had really stored anything to get through it, and especially down by the ocean. I've spoken with probably 200 of the people over the last month since that hurricane. Every single person told me the same thing. We didn't believe it would be that bad, so we didn't do anything. So you see out in the streets, huge mounds of furniture. All the furniture destroyed because the water went in, that 12-foot tidal wave went in for almost a mile and just soaked everything. Some people said their house was filled with water for 8 days. And no one thought, maybe this is a belief in the certainty of my safety. And look at what it cost them. But we should have learned this from Hurricane Sandy. We didn't. And from Sandy, we should have learned from Hurricane Katrina. And we didn't. So we seem to learn nothing. And yet we expect a good outcome. So I'm just asking people in this audience who are watching and listening now, stop for a moment. Get real and get honest. Why haven't you made all the changes with all the information? It's like saying, I'm thirsty for knowledge. Here's a glass. It's not enough. Here's a bucket. It's not enough. Here's a bathtub. It's not enough. Here's a gigantic container ship filled with knowledge. It's not enough. At what point do you have enough to feel that you can make the changes and feel comfortable about the changes you're making? And most people, unfortunately, in the world today, they're not making the changes they need to. And as a result, they feel absolutely helpless and overwhelmed by the crisis that are occurring. The crisis of obesity, the crisis of diabetes, the crisis of heart disease, cancers, inflammatory conditions, neurodegenerative conditions, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS. And most of this could have been prevented had we simply started with the idea, am I truly happy? Now, there are people who are truly happy. And there are people who are truly happy and then open to seeing what they can change to be healthier, to live a longer life. At least happiness grounds you in the idea that you can now explore. If you've enjoyed your life, would you like to live another 5, 10, 20 years in good health? Or are you at that age where you said, well, I've been there, done that, lived my life, worked hard, I'm ready, I'm retired. So I'm just waiting on to die, but I, you know, hopefully without pain. That's not the way we should be thinking. Then there's something inherently maladjusted within that belief system. I should not have to be more concerned about your health than you are concerned about your health. I should not be out there leading demonstrations against corporate criminals to fight for your rights and benefits. You should be there too. Just a thought. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
So this has come out recently out of the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario. The college sent out a letter or a memo to all the doctors in Ontario suggesting to them, now so far they're not mandating it, they're just suggesting it, that any of their unvaccinated patients, that they should consider that they have a mental problem and that they should be put on psychiatric medication. So far, it's just a suggestion, but the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario should not be making these kinds of suggestions. This is extremely unethical, and this is a very, very slippery slope. If they're suggesting that people who wish to have bodily autonomy and don't want an experimental vaccine, that there may be something mentally wrong with them, that is a very, very dangerous slippery slope that we're on.
All right. So now, for those of you who have been paying attention to the issue, we went from having an easily treatable disease, COVID, where there was a 99%+ survival overall. And if you were 60 and under, very little mortality. But those with comorbidities over 70 did have about, I think it was around somewhere between two, let's figure 2.73% fatalities. But now, those people who chose, even for legitimate reasons, I've already had COVID, therefore I have natural immunity. In 200 peer-reviewed studies, the bulk, the vast majority of all the science shows the best thing that could happen is you have the virus and you now have natural immunity, which is vibrant, long-lasting, far a lot longer than protection than any vaccine. And therefore, you shouldn't be vaccinated, because we've had no studies of giving those who've had the virus the vaccine to see what the long-term outcome is to their immune system, including the capacity to create autoimmune reactions, which could kill a person. But that didn't matter. They still said, vaccinate everyone. Think of all the people, the young people, who had no statistical death at all. There are a few people die, but generally they had leukemia or some other comorbidity. But the vast majority of children had 0.03% death, which meant that more people would die from the vaccine who are young than from the virus itself. And that's been proven. So now we're told that we have an epidemic of the unvaccinated and then attacking the unvaccinated and attacking them ruthlessly. All right, here's a clip about pandemic amnesty. Do you forgive and forget? That's what one of the sisters is saying. Listen to what the other says. Then I'd like you to call in and share your points of view at 888-874-4888.
So glad COVID is finally over. Mm-hmm. I mean, things were so crazy. I think we all went a little crazy.
Some of us did. Yeah.
I read this great article in The Atlantic, you know? And it was called COVID Amnesty. It was so great. It really, really resonated with me.
I'm sure it did.
The author was talking about, you know, how her four-year-old was like screaming at people to social distance and they were wearing their cloth masks outside. And, you know, she just realized it was all a little bit too much, you know?
Oh yeah, I know. Lots of people screamed at me when I was pregnant. They didn't even let me in to pay for takeout. They made me wait outside in the freezing cold.
Anyways, she was saying that we should all just kind of move on. Recognize that we just didn't know, you know, that it was all just a little too much, you know.
I knew.
Oh, totally. I knew it too. You know, I mean, we should all just recognize that we didn't know enough. And so we all acted kind of a little crazy.
What you mean about lockdowns, masks, mandates, people getting fired for not taking an experimental jab that we know and they knew then didn't stop transmission, people missing their surgeries, cancer treatments, and essentially getting shut out of society because they didn't want to engage in this experiment?
Yeah, I mean, we were all scared, like we just wanted to stay safe. So, you know, I guess we didn't really know that some of that stuff wasn't really going to do anything. But, you know, live and learn, live and learn. I posted about it on Facebook pretty much every day. I have a YouTube channel that I've been posting on for about 2.5 years, and I sent you a lot of videos too.
Yeah, but you were kind of posting things that were like misinformation.
Like what?
About masks and stuff.
Oh, like how they don't work and they're just a humiliating virtue signal of political servitude?
Yeah, like we know they don't work now, but we didn't know at the time.
So it was a conspiracy theory that turned out to be true.
I don't know.
All I know is that we should just all move on and forgive each other.
I certainly think some people need to ask for forgiveness.
Yes, exactly. We should ask each other to forgive each other.
But there are some people who did terrible things and other people who were on the receiving end of those terrible things. They were the victims. Why do the victims need to ask for forgiveness? For what?
Exactly. We were all victims and we just let this fear, you know, make us do crazy things.
You told me I couldn't come to grandma's funeral because I wasn't jabbed.
I just want to move on. That's all in the past now, okay? I don't want to live the rest of my life feeling bad about things. I just want to move on. We all just want to move on.
You know that the government killed grandma and grandpa too, right?
Okay, let's not go there, okay? Listen, I met a really great therapist over Zoom that I talked to about my pandemic anxiety. I think that she could really help you, maybe to talk a little bit about your feelings, you know, but Zoom is great.
you know, by the way, I think it was really great that we were at least able to work from home. A lot of people couldn't work from home. A lot of people lost their jobs, their businesses, their careers, their homes, you know, including my husband. I just wish we would have known then what we know now, but we did. Okay, I get it. You know everything. You always did. I think it's just time that we forgive each other and we move on. I'm not sure what I did wrong. Can you explain it to me, please? Like, I'm all about forgiveness and in making reparations, but usually what needs to happen is the person that did something wrong, they apologize, they admit error, they express their remorse, and then they tell you what they're going to do to make up for it. And then they start to engage in the kind of actions that make reparations. Yeah, but if you didn't mean to hurt anybody, then, you know, the other person should just forgive you because that's what makes you a good person. Forgive, forget, move on. You know, I can forgive, but I can never forget. And I think a lot of people feel the same way. You know, what you're describing is essentially just sweeping things under the rug. Like, millions of people were treated as second-class citizens. They were essentially barred from society. They were no longer able to go out anywhere in public. They couldn't travel within their own country. They couldn't go eat in a restaurant. And I know you guys have been saying, oh, it's no big deal. Like, your choice, you stay home then if you don't want to get jabbed or whatever it is. But listen, like, people actually need to go get food sometimes. When we were selling our house, it was the middle of the winter. We had a baby in the car with us, and we couldn't go anywhere. We had to drive around all day. And if we wanted to get food, we had to stop for takeout somewhere and eat junk food. And then we had to sit in the car. And yeah, okay, there's the consequence of my choice, right? What about selling your home? What about losing your career of 2 decades? What about losing your business? What about no longer being able to feed your kids? What about the children who went to school and were traumatized by having to wear masks all day long, or people who had to sit there on Zoom? What about the child suicides? Okay. Like, this is a huge thing that happened. People missed their cancer treatments. People missed surgeries that were life saving. People died because of this. You look at what happened in the old.
Okay. Those are some of the arguments. The key, however, is what the one person said here, that we didn't know. That's what the media is saying now. Well, we didn't have the information. But in point of fact, we did. They simply were hiding it. We had to go to court and under Freedom of Information Act and get the documents, the Pfizer manufacturing documents, to show that the statistics they were giving us were not accurate. Only recently, only about 2 months ago, did we find out at the European Commission's special investigation into COVID that the president of one of Pfizer's divisions said, when asked, you did studies or did you do studies showing that the vaccine would prevent transmission? And the person said, no, we didn't do those studies. Yet from the very beginning, everyone, Rachel Maddow and everyone else, the president of the United States, everyone else said, get the vaccines, you won't get infected, you won't go to the hospital, you won't die. All those were lies. Now, these were lies that you can say with their commission or omission. I'm saying they were intentional, my opinion. Why? Because when you had the resources of ABC, NBC, CBS, New York Times, the Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, Boston Globe, Miami Herald, you have enormous access to virtually everything that you would need, including intelligence inside sources that are always leaking information to these very same people. So they could have found the same information that we found. For example, at the very beginning, I wrote the first articles in the United States about how to build up the immune system to limit the impact on your immune system if you should get COVID. Then all the dozens of studies that already existed in the peer-reviewed scientific literature and the journals of toxicology and environmental exposure showing you the mask did not work. I gave you that example. I said, imagine putting a big chain link fence around your swimming pool to keep the mosquitoes out. You could get 10,000 mosquitoes through one of those links. And then I talked about the size of the virus compared to what the mask would prevent. And that the only thing that would prevent it was wearing a shield that would cover the eyes, the nose, and the mouth, and then gloves and proper sanitation, or an N95 mask. But again, you have to understand, you can't walk around wearing any kind of mask for long because you're depriving yourself of oxygen and you're increasing carbon dioxide. Both of those had tests proving it. Also, the masks they were advocating and people were using every day were masks that shed, including fibrous material that does not break down, synthetic fibers that go into the lung and cause fibrosis and lung disease and lead to death. We had that information. We had from the very beginning, the very first reports of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, along with azithromycin, monoclonal antibodies, zinc, vitamin C, quercetin. This was the first place you heard that in the United States. But those were quality studies and clinical experiences. When one doctor at one medical clinic has 10,000 patients who have COVID, all of them received that combination, and only four patients died, and those were four that started their therapies very late, not at the beginning. Well, could you imagine if that person had gone through Congress and said to a full joint session of Congress, I'm a board-certified practicing clinician, I'm a professor of medicine, and I've never had a problem, no controversy, and here's the therapy I used, all FDA-approved and off-label use, and I saved 100% of the patients, except for four that started very late. But instead, they were manufacturing dissent, and they were manufacturing dissent that they knew was wrong. But when it came about and they had to retract their attack pieces on ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, other countries around the world, Tokyo, the Minister of Health for Tokyo, had a very high level of COVID infection and death until he gave ivermectin, dropped to nothing, almost zero. The largest populated state in India had high death rate, used ivermectin, went down to almost zero. Same in the bottom areas of, there was Peru, Argentina, Mexico. So all over the world, we were getting positive feedback. And which group of people on the planet, over 1.1 billion people, did not have the vaccines in any measurable amount, tiny percentage, yet they didn't have COVID deaths? In Africa, because they've been using the Sunday-to-Sunday medicine, both ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine for decades, over 4 billion uses and no fatalities. But then they went further. They knew that the only way they could get the experimental vaccines into everyone's body was to say that there was no other treatment that would work because the FDA's own rules say that you cannot have emergency use authorization if there's anything else that would do the same thing. Well, there was. Ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. And as a result, they had to destroy the two things stopping them from getting this done. And then they, you know, just imagine, you know, when you talk about all the viruses, the Spanish flu and the Zika virus and the Warburg, all these are based upon where they originated, a river, a place in the world. And all those were acceptable until we said that the Wuhan Institute accidentally released this virus. And as a result, that's where it was. And suddenly everybody saw you're xenophobic if you say that. That's the danger of a group of nitwit, halfwit, and functionally illiterate individuals trying to game the system's protocols by making sure there's only one narrative, the official narrative. So everyone was complicit in the wrongful deaths. Now, they talked about, sitting outside in a car having to eat junk food because no other place would allow you in. How about the 8 million people who died worldwide? How about the nearly million people who died in the United States? Is that not a legitimate part of the argument? Because we could have prevented 90% of those deaths. That's genocide. Now, I don't care how you call it, it's genocide. And what did we learn after World War II? Because we had the philosophy of the good German. I'm a good German. 50 million of us are good Germans. We weren't in the concentration camps putting people in the ovens or into the, you know, xylene gas chambers. But you knew about it. It was no secret. All the death squads in Ukraine using Ukraine's national hero, who to this day is praised. So they did the Nuremberg trials. As a result, from those Nuremberg trials, which the United States had jurists on, including Dr. Andrew Ivey, it was stated that no longer could a person in any field, in any area of life, say, I was just following orders. So you as a doctor, a pediatrician, a nurse, a pharmacist, you are responsible. Shame on you, all of you. Not only were you cowards, but you were also complicit because you refused to go out and demonstrate. A handful, 10 people, none knowing each other, all demonstrated in front of the Supreme Court, and for that they were all attacked, their reputations destroyed. We have some of the most cited physician scientists in the world. In fact, the most cited in the scientific literature. They set at the pinnacle of respect. Dr. Merrick, who I'm filming, by the way, next week, and at least 10 others who were the most cited in all of their fields, cardiology, nephrology, and all coming down to the same thing. They were all destroyed. Now, everyone knew this. Everyone got the state medical board's completely corrupt organization that got gave letters to every physician. You cannot give ivermectin, et cetera. You could lose your license. This was fascism. Fascism supported completely, like the brown shirts and the black shirts, Rome's brown shirts in the 1930s and Mussolini's black shirts 1922 forward. They knew what they were doing. They had to destroy the reputations of people who were the most respected physicians and scientists in the world, and they did. What they didn't count upon was that these people would fight back. And they did, and are. So, do you believe that we should give Fauci and all the other, Dr. Collins and Walensky and all the others, at every stage of this, head of the World Health Organization, we should all give them a pass. We should be like Vietnam. Lessons learned, move on. Move on. Did we ever apologize to the millions of Vietnamese who were killed and live with the legacy of Agent Orange, dioxin, 245T, causing birth defects? No. Did we apologize for going into Afghanistan? Oh, and by the way, just as an aside for those of you who really support this administration, that kind of exit was one of the dumbest political moves, and it was a purely political move. As a result, the Taliban have a new industry, starving children, taking out their organs and selling them. All right? So what we feared, the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, is now back in full force with the full support of the Taliban in Afghanistan. So what was the purpose of 22 years, all the thousands of lives of Americans lost and all the others, the people there? It had no purpose. None. Those are my thoughts. I'd like to hear yours, 888-874-4888. And now here is one of the truly courageous people, Claire Daly, Irish member of the European Union, a very corrupt organization, a cesspool. The people who head it, well, I'm going to save this for our next broadcast because I have a really in-depth investigative report on Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum and their ideas for you. And remember, those of you who've chosen not to become involved, there's too much going on in my life. I just don't have the time to do anything. Okay. Well, I'm going to let you know what's coming at you. And what are you going to say once it happens? You're going to say, how did this happen? Because your entire American media was compromised and corrupted. The government's compromised and corrupted. The corporate America is compromised and corrupted. And what does it say then about the value of your life? Here's Claire Daly in a minute's speech.
President, billions of EU assistance going to Ukraine are not free. their loans, which Ukraine will default on, and they come with neoliberal strings attached. If you listen to the economists, Ukraine is marked for a nightmare round of shock therapy, a sell-off of public land, deregulation of labour, sale of public assets, on it goes. The country's future is being sold to finance a proxy war that's tearing it apart. And of course the loans have preconditions that Ukraine must uphold democracy and rule of law, but since the tap was turned on, Zelensky has banned most opposition parties, shuttered the media, printed kill lists of dissidents, attacked trade unions and workers' rights, but the billions keep flowing. This is a country, our Court of Auditors have said, was a country accused of grand corruption. And on it goes, while the EU policy seems designed to prevent peace and keep the war going at all costs as long as ordinary people pay. So between Russian tanks and European banks, there'll be little left of Ukraine when this is over. Don't forget, war is a racket and there's going to be hell to pay for this one.
There'll be nothing to pay for this one. There's never been anything or anyone to pay on any level for any of the wars, regime changes, assassinations, and all the other crimes against humanity that we are known for and pride ourselves in. Let's say hello to Jeremiah from Harlem. Hi, Jeremiah. Your turn.
Pleasure to talk with you today, Gary. On the subject of amnesty, unfortunately, we can't accept amnesty as a solution at this point because actual crimes were committed, major crimes, transgressions against not only the citizens of this country, but against the global public. So, you know, for all of those vigilant people who have been speaking out or who have known from the beginning that something was really off with this whole narrative, unfortunately, this battle isn't over. Even if you're tired, the battle is not over. They're still pushing vaccine mandates on college campuses. We have Dr. Fauci retiring and his farewell words. Well, and everyone go get our untested, bivalent new vaccine that we're mistitling a booster, even as other countries are making these products less and less available, which is another thing that I don't understand at all, Gary, which is you put an age limit on something. You say, oh, we're not going to give this to anyone who's below the age of 30. So when I become 31, it's not harmful to me anymore. I'm not going to get a blood clot because I'm 31 today and I was 30 yesterday. How about none of those products in our bodies? And, you know, this is just such a complicated issue, unfortunately, because I mean, we have to start with the beginning, which is gain of function research. I mean, what the hell were these guys doing trying to enhance viruses? And I've seen leftists, quote unquote leftists, I call them the formerly astute, acting as though, you know, this is some ridiculous thing. Oh, give me a break, bioweapons. No, not give me a break. There's something called warfare. And unfortunately, in warfare, you think of harming people in every possible way under the sun, with lasers, with missiles, with all types of bombs, with bioweapons. So, you know, there's just been a lot of turning lots of blind eyes to lots of things. It's like a mansion with so many different rooms in it. And these are all, you know, areas that we need to unpack, from the gain of function all the way up to vaccine injury, to all the human rights violations that went on through mandates, on and on and on and on. There's so many compartments to this thing. And, you know, quite unfortunately, the battle is not over. And when you say amnesty, we can go ahead and take that as admission to serious crimes that were committed. It's reminiscent of Barack Obama doing the cover-up job for the previous administration, where he said, let's look forward, no looking back, which is basically a way of admitting, well, major crimes were committed, but we won't prosecute them. We'll just let it slide. But what are we not looking back on, and what are we providing amnesty for exactly? You mean all the people whose lives were ruined through whether it be vaccine injury or people losing their family businesses, being evicted, foreclosure, all the devastating effects of lockdown, which saved no one from a health point of view. I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, hunker down, everyone, because the battle is far from over. And they set some really bad precedents here. So if you care about children, whether you have children or not, you know, do we want a world where our children are just assigned new medications to take every week? Oh, there's a new disease. Oh, there's a new pill you have to take. There's a new injection. Go get your injection or you can't show up at work the next week. I mean, that's kind of the precedent that we've set, that they can, in a very shabby way, force us to take untested products to participate in society. I mean, you know, give them an inch, they'll take a yard. Give them a yard, they'll take a mile.
Jeremiah, thank you once again. You're always welcome on this program because you share an enlightened point of view and we appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gary.
And I believe, and I hope I'm wrong, I believe that the worst fatalities are still to come because of all of the myocarditis and all the heart conditions and the special lipid phenomena they're finding in the arteries and veins, so bad that a lot of embalmers can't even put embalming fluid in because they got to first take tweezers and pull these long strings of lipid out that we'd never seen before prior to the vaccines. So we could be seeing possibly millions of Americans end up with death because of that. So this is not over. We're going to say goodbye to WBI because they have to go to the news, and we're going to continue on. I'm going to come to you in a moment here, our next caller, but I just want to quickly mention that that we have a special today, a Black Friday special, and it's a really good one. My staff in New York comes up with these, Josh and Phil and Sharon and Neil. This is red stuff, fiber stuff, and the new multi-award-winning documentary, The Biological Aging Challenge. The whole package, which is a phenomenal package, it covers so many of our needs at the biological level, would normally be $202.97. You're only paying $90. You're paying less than even one product like Red Stuff. You're saving 60%. You're saving $112.97. Real quick, if you're not familiar with what's in some of these products, just take a look. And when you look to see that the amount of high-quality fiber, lots of fiber, but you're getting a full spectrum of all the important nutrients in each product. I don't have time to go through all the nutrients, so I'll simply say, if you've been using red stuff, you know how well you feel, you know what it's doing, you know you're flooding the body and the cells with the very nutrients in the most concentrated form. Remember, eat something, you get a certain percentage of it biologically available and digested, depending upon the amount of fiber. Juice it, you get more of it. Concentrate it, you get more of it. But the big mother load of benefit is the powder. And you're getting all of the good nutrients in there when you have your red stuff. And it's all organic, by the way, all organic, whole new formula. And then the same is true for the fiber stuff, all the high quality fibers for people who may not be as regular as they should be. So the apple fiber, the oat fiber, the flaxseed fibers, the psyllium fibers, the cinnamon, rice bran. You're getting ginger, cranberry fiber, guar fiber, orange juice fiber, pineapple, lemon, lime, cherry, watermelon, pear, mango, strawberry, and papaya and aloe vera. There's no other product like this. If you're really healthy, take it once a day for a month, then skip a month. Once a day for a month, skip a month. But if you really have problems in digestion, take it every day. So how do you get this special? It's simple. Let me give you the number. Call for the Black Friday special, 60% off. 877 627-5065, 877-627-5065. Or you can call Neil in the Vitamin Closet Monday to Saturday, noon to 8 at 646-926-5430. All right, so call 877-627-5065. Go up on our GaryNall.com. You can just order it yourself right all over the line. Okay, this special will be available through Sunday at midnight. Now let's go over and say hello to one person who's been standing by, and we appreciate it. Let's say hello to Ron from Long Island. And Sandy, I'll come to you quick. Ron, your turn.
All right, Gary. I just was wondering that if Bill Gates, I'm wondering how much he knew about the possible side effects of these injectables prior to having them being used. And I'm wondering whether he actually took the vaccine himself.
I don't know if he took the vaccine. I do know that we've gotten reports, so I have not independently confirmed, that Macron and some others who are well known took saline or placebo vaccines, but it looked good for the public. And remember, he is a major investor in the companies that are making the vaccines, and therefore what they knew, he could have known. My opinion is that he was fully aware, but that's my opinion. What will happen is we have Nuremberg trial in the United States or worldwide, and they bring him in, and we get all of the documents and all the conversations by all the people, then we'll know more of the truth. Thank you very much. And we'll finish off our program today with Sandy from Westchester. Hi, Sandy, your turn.
Gary, thank you. This is a continuation of what AI comments were yesterday or the day before. Anyway, we are losing our young people to involve themselves in critical thinking so they can accept AI, they can accept the numbing in this media frenzy, they can accept fear as normal. I'm amazed at how many young people will not even talk to me or anyone else that I know of my age, and I'm your age, Gary, about their concerns. They don't want to bother. And I was stunned. I went to visit some people, and all these young people were sitting in the living room, and they were watching this really strange program. And I said, hey, guys, don't you want to watch something else? And they looked at me. We can't find the remote. And some of these young people were sitting just a foot away from the screen. And I'm saying, like, this is it. So, Gary, what you were referring to, we don't want to think. Our young people don't want to think. And we're afraid to think. We're afraid to question. We're afraid to be different. I actually had friends starting to lie to me in a different way. You know, people that I care about me for years. They started telling me that they weren't vaccinated because they agreed with what I believed or what I have been saying or whatever. And actually, they had been vaccinated. And then some of them said, I was lying to you. I really did get vaccinated. Now I'm worried, things are coming out, And I was stunned.
Sandy, because we're running out of time. I don't believe that people don't want to know, younger people, because some younger people are very aware. It depends upon the quality of their family input of letting them to do homework on their own, but using multiple sources other than official sources to see if they can come to some truth other than what is spoon-fed to them as propaganda. And I'm doing a special. In fact, we're filming all next week for a special on what to do if you've had the vaccine and now you'd like to do what you can to limit the toxic effects of the vaccine, or if you have long COVID, what to do to help you get back to your health, and also how to protect yourself by super boosting your immune system. So I'm putting a lot of energy and time and effort into seeing that that gets accomplished. So that's coming at you. Okay? And remember, Sandy, it is not for us to make other people's minds up for them. It is for them to realize that there's a consequence to wrong choices. And there's a time in life where you have to allow people, if they choose not to pay attention to the truth, to learn the pain of indifference or hubris. That's on them. Let's hope that they survive that lesson and then begin to learn. Thank you all. I'm Gary Knoll. We're out of time. Utrecht Lead, right now.